Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 9th, 2005. This session, Object and Subject, Text and Context, presented in the Creekside Room by Steve Ringo. This is disc number RIS-2005-02. Let's listen in.
We started, so I guess I'm supposed to say Vernet Antonio. Yeah, Don Neo is out there. I'm going to start back with this poem that we end with, the poem we started with on Monday. I think you may already have this, some of you, but if you don't, you know, y'all live in Canada. And then let's, I'll read this one, see if I can do a better job than I did on Monday. It's the one in the middle, Perception. And I love the fact that this was written in 1866. She was so ahead of her time, Emily Dickinson. Perception of an object costs precise the object's loss. So the cost of perception, when you perceive something in a new way, it takes away, something is removed because you got it in a new way now here. And it's precisely, so it's sort of kind of an equal trade over, she's saying. Perception in itself a gain, replying to its price. The object absolute is not. Perception sets it fair and then upbraids a perfectness that situates so far. Now, we talked about perception and I on the way up to the third level on Monday, and I like to bring that whole discussion back to perception, because we've done some thinking, and those who haven't been here, you do your own thinking, you perceive as you go through Holden. How many of you have done something creative, either in a class or session or on your own, while you've been here? Something. And if you don't raise your hand, I'm gonna keep asking you until we find it, because I presume it's there, that you've done something creative. Somebody get us started. Tell us what you did.
I made a hat.
You made a hat. Can you tell us a little more?
I took some yarn, which is beautiful, and it looked like just this colorful yarn, and when I knit it up, it ended up coming into nice, pretty little stripes.
So it's knitted?
It's knitted.
Yes. Is it for you?
No.
Is it for somebody or anybody?
I don't know who it's for.
So it wasn't targeted for specific. So she's thinking for somebody. It's a gift. It's different when you make a gift, isn't it? It's different when you make something else. So cool. Thank you. Who else has done something? You've made something or done something creative while you've been here?
Well, we made cord.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cordage.
Absolutely.
And that's a memento, I think, of Holden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was interesting.
Can you tell us how many types of cord you made? Or was it one type?
Simple red cedar cord.
Okay.
Out of about...
The inner bark.
About, you had to take the bark and you had to thinly strip it to make the strands. And you had about 4 strands in each section.
Mm-hmm.
Did the twisting and overlap.
Yeah.
Really, it comes out just looking beautiful.
And before we did our formal beginning, I was ready to say this is our beginning, because what you said about Joe's class, and I love it when classes start to overlap like this, because that's what they should be doing. But you said something about, I think your exact words were, I'll never look at trees the same again.
Yeah, I said that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And that's very, I mean,
I'll never look at junk any different, the same again.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. Mm-hmm.
And I found a piece, that piece I thought was unique, you know, mm-hmm. and it intrigued me. And it intrigued me more, and that's why I shouldn't have left it with you, but it intrigued me more as I got away from it, you know, and I suppose that's part of the perception, isn't
uh-huh.
it?
And then now you have only left appeared to perceive it,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, but it's a good memory. I mean, I have it. I know exactly what it looks like.
He has a relationship with this.
Yeah.
It's a junk that disappears.
You know what I wonder about? You read this Emily Dickinson, and I don't know whether the gain that you get is equal to the loss of the object. I think it's more. I think there's more to it than just simply the object's giving you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
And then we run with it, don't we?
Yeah.
And we build on, kind of like these things we've been taking, or the cord you make, or the hat. Depending on who you give this hat to, could have a, sometimes people, kids, whoever, they get a hat that they just love forever. Or I've had shoes, or I've had, I had a pencil that I, a mechanical pencil that I had for 11 years that I just lost about a month ago. And I love that pencil.
Like losing part of yourself.
But the hat could be, the objects become more. I absolutely agree. The objects become more than what they really are. But they keep loaning out their perception to many people, don't they? I think that's
Yeah, I think mine has.
Yeah. his disappeared. I won't use the word stolen, but
I
brought it down and laid it along that carpenter shop. But somebody else perceived it.
Yeah.
And now it's gone missing.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe someone else is enjoying your
pencil, too. Maybe. Yeah, that's right,
probably.
Too.
It was a Father's Day present, so it had some attachment that way too. But it was, anyway, it was about that long, so it would go in your pocket.
Oh, it's a small mechanical.
It was stubby, and it had a 1.4 lead, which is very thick. So you can kind of, I like the bold
stroke. Draw with it.
Draw with it. Some of the, I teach in the prison in the Spokane area, and some of the prisoners, is a sad part of the story, but when they, I've been there 10 years, and when they come back after getting in trouble again,
oh,
you still have that same pencil. Yeah, I do.
Oh, gosh. They have a perception that they didn't lose it.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Anyone else have something they did while you've been at Holden that's been creative? It can be thought. I mean, thoughts, too, right? Writing, art, anybody. Don't be shy.
I created something. I went to these first class up on the third level and gathering stuff. And it's over there because we just epoxied it last night. And the interesting thing is, out of all that stuff, the only thing that I picked up was the backing and the mouth and the ear on that little face.
Yours is a community.
It is, because we were standing down by lot 6 with all the stuff spread out, and I had some things. And young girl came by and was just taken with that blue rectangle on the back. And she said, "Oh, you could make a face with this." And she started grabbing stuff and putting it on. And actually, we even had hair. It was a.
So she saw it before it even was created.
We had an earring and all kinds of stuff. And then, just as I thought we were ready to start pulling, she walked away. It's like she didn't even say, "I'm done, I'm leaving, okay." But it was just, she was down the road, and there I was going, oh. And then I sort of felt like, I wanted to finish this thing.
Yeah, and she was beaming.
She was. She just had so much fun looking and playing. And yeah, it was fun.
I appreciate that you were willing to be a team, because you had a thing going of your own, which is creative, and then she was open enough to create with a partner that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And
I
can't.
Went into nowhere.
Yeah.
Just a passing wind, a wind of skill.
But you opened yourself to that. I think you're targeting it for Narnia.
I think so.
Yeah. So maybe you want to take it over there, and person, that's part of the gift, is the giving, right? Very cool. And you've been creating.
Yes, and I'm going. Which I don't tend to think of as creative.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. And writing in a journal. You know, I've done that every day.
You bet. It is. It's kind of, you see how it's perception, right?
Yes.
Writing is immediate. What did you perceive that you're writing about, either inside yourself or surface layers, deeper layers, something you observed, something you did, something someone said? Anybody else? Something you created or did? Something you did that was creative while you've been here.
Okay, when I went up to the third level, I saw the differences in things that attached themselves to me, the natural things. And even though I did not go and put them together, I, in my mindset, I saw how I would have done it as I picked up the pieces, and they remind me, as I saw many of it coming from the East Coast, I was the ocean, so I saw I had taken one of those big nails, and it's still in there.
It's here.
Yes, I mean, and that became a sailing ship, to, a sailing vessel.
Forget how
how you had it.
It's in the, and that, you know, and the driftwood. So even though I was up on the mountain,
you felt as though you were on the shore.
The seashore was, the ocean was calling me that I must go down to the sea again, to the one we see
in the sky. There's your tall ship.
Here when we read the Whitman poem? Yes, you did?
No, I wasn't here.
Yeah, but I do remember you responded to wood.
Yes.
More so than some of the metal.
Than some of the other thing. And that's, I've been up to Holden a few times, and I have learned so much in the art world that I never thought I had. I took a course on, you know, drawing with the right side of the brain, and I actually learned how to do something, and it looked like what I was copying, whereas I always said, I can't draw a straight line, and then took a watercoloring color class, and just amazed myself what Holden brings out in the gifts that I get.
Fortunately, Betty, you weren't looking at a straight line, so it was like...
Right?
Plus
the cording.
You did the cording.
That's great.
Anybody else? Did the shoes or the drawing of the feet? I know a couple of our members who were here that aren't here. You drew the feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's creative.
I don't want to take them off. This is just so... So that was really, it was great, and I'll tell you, we had some wonderful conversations while we were drawing on feet. My daughter came with us, and it just, the difference between people saying, I want to copy something that looks exactly like that, and other people who were just kind of going wherever they wanted to go.
What were you using?
Sharpies.
Sharpies, okay.
And some artist pens.
Uh-huh.
Just some of the...
Color though, huh?
Black and... I guess it was Indian ink.
Mostly black. Indian ink. Mm-hmm. Henna would have been pretty expensive and more permanent. But
yeah.
Not permanent, but more so.
Right. It's this, you know, a person does have to bathe, and so it will come off.
Yeah,
probably
right.
Before I have to wear stockings on Monday, which is probably good.
My wife was spearheading that one over on the green after the 4th of July kind of deal that we had on the, what do you call it, the Ark.
On the Ark, yeah.
And I dropped in on them a couple of times. It was intense. They were so quiet and focused, and you know, people drawing on each other, and but in a very respectful, you know, just honorific kind of way. That was
almost
amazing.
Almost like foot washing.
Yeah, something very powerful about it. And other people said something like that too. That. And a lot of them were the younger folks, you know, the teenagers that are high school kids that you think are all just going to be bursting and bustling and yakking and whatnot, but they were geared into it.
I think one of the Vesper services was powerful too, the one that blessed the senses.
Yeah.
I thought
the ears and
that
the eyes.
That was, you know,
yeah.
The heart.
Absolutely. Now, I want to go with one more poem. Or actually, scripture passage. I do have a poem too.
Thank you.
This is from Luke. The Road to Emmaus. And I'd like to tie this back into our theme. Before we do, we have two words. Can you see that in the way back, text and context, object and subject, and then what's the theme for the summer at Holden?
Take off your shoes.
Because for?
You are in a holy place.
Holy ground.
Holy ground. So keep these in mind. And then the last thing I'll ask before we read this, in the older times of confirmation and catechism, we talked about the three articles of faith. And raise your hand if you know the three articles of faith. Okay. Those are the terms that don't get used much more, but let's start with the three parts of the Trinity.
What are the three?
Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Now. So. What is the main, if you think of the creed, the Apostles' Creed, I believe in God, the Father Almighty. What's the next word?
Creator of heaven and earth.
So if the first article of confession is about the Father as creator, that's called the first article of faith, is creation. The Son, what does the Son do?
The Redeemer.
Redeemer. So we got creator, Redeemer, and Holy Spirit.
Sustainer
or sanctifier.
Sanctifier.
Now it's coming back, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't quite sure where you were heading.
Yeah. Those are confirmation terms that I don't think we use too much anymore. As the first article of the creed has to do with the creation and the created order. The Son does this, and obviously they do more. It's kind of theological categorizing. But I want to try to think of what we've been doing in the third level with these objects as something where we recreate. There's a Midrashic Jewish term called the eighth day of creation, where God created in 6 days, and then what did God do on the seventh
rested.
Day? Rested. Rest. But the eighth day of creation is ours, according to Jewish tradition, and I think we can grab onto that one too, that the eighth day of creation, our job is to take any of the stuff that's been made in 1 through 6 and recreate in an eighth day. So there really isn't nothing, like the Ecclesiastes says, there's nothing new under the sun, right? It's all old stuff out there. I guess we created plastic somewhere. Well,
it was around. It just
stuff.
Wasn't put together.
Recombinant.
Yeah.
Let's say recombinant DNA. You know?
Yeah.
The eighth day of creation is for us. We are created. We are creatures, right? But from the Creator, he/she, God, gives us the blessedness of enjoying the creation and recreating with it. You all said things that you did that were creative this week. Plus, everything you do in relationships is creative, I would submit. So nobody said that, and maybe that takes a little guts, but any relationship you built this while at Holden, any relationship you built any time in your life is creative. If you go there, you said you'll never look at a tree the same. Can't you say the same about a person? Can't you say, I'll never see that person the same? Maybe it's someone you knew a long time. Maybe it's someone you just met. Maybe it's the gal who did this with you. You'll remember her maybe for a while.
I'll never think of rabbis as the same. Okay.
That's true. Now, isn't that a wonderful gift?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Redeeming. How has redeeming been going on?
Save the recreation.
To save and to bless it. Instead of curse. There's blessing and curse throughout the Bible. Blessing and curse. Confession, forgiveness. Death, new life. Death, new life. All of that's redeeming. It isn't always in the shape of a cross, but for Christians, the cross is the filter or the focus. But redeeming happens in many, many ways. Saving it, pulling it down from the mind. Thinking a new thought. Accepting someone you didn't accept before, maybe. That's reclaiming something that might be lost to you, or something that was someone else lost that you found and maybe gave back, or it happens in a lot of ways. The redeeming.
I think that's enhancing, too. That's part of the thing that Emily Dickinson was talking about.
Absolutely. I like that. Nice connection.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, if we'll ever read this passage. What does this mean? That's an old Luther question, isn't it? What does this mean? And then he always answers his own questions. Sustainer, sanctifier. What does that mean? I think. Go ahead.
I was going to say, to me it means today.
Okay.
In a broad sense.
Today. And
onward. Can I say that? Mm-hmm. Today and onward. Also, a good word, I think, is growth. Growth, formation. We talked about in Bonnie's class, formation. The Pentecost, what's the color for the Pentecost season in the Lutheran, in the liturgical? For the Pentecost day is red, but for the Pentecost season is green. Green is growth. Pentecost season is the longest, like 28 weeks or something, 27. Goes on and on and on. That's the period where the church is supposed to grow. We're talking about growth. How do we grow in the Spirit? That the Spirit builds on all of this. And obviously they're one and three and three and one. And how the heck do you make sense of any of that, right? Not going there.
It's a mystery.
I know it. That's a tangled web.
I'm struck with this model that you've done up there. You created this thing. You've redeemed, thrown out material, and now you will sustain it by putting it in iron.
Exactly. Yeah. Nicely said. Yeah. And then if you have something you take home that you made, that you thought, that you have the cord, the tree, the way you look at trees, the people you met, the ideas you integrated and created into your worldview, that's all new creation.
Yeah, you're a different person for having the exposure.
That's right. And that should be every day, today, right? And I don't mean should as in a tyranny, but as in a challenge. That's every day. Here we go, Road to Emmaus. And our theme for the summer comes in at the end. And keep some of these in mind while we read. This comes after the resurrection. So everybody's, what's their mood? Down.
Lost. Fearful.
Very few people know about the resurrection. Jesus was crucified and this is, you know, well, that's over now.
What do we do now?
Grief.
They felt abandoned.
So it's hard for Christians 2,000 years later to capture that. You know, we can't go back and feel that grief, but like reading a book or a novel, you can kind of think, wow, what would that have been like? Here we go. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. I love that everything. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. That same day, right, just like you said, today. He asked them, what are you discussing together as you walk along? Sounds a little bit Socratic, a little bit, you know, devious, I think. Yeah.
Setting them up.
Setting them up.
It's very rabbinic.
Like you didn't know.
Yeah, right.
They stood still. Their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there in these days? Like, what kind of idiot are you? You know, where you been? Up at Holden where you don't get the news, right? And then this, you know, he's still playing dumb, right? What things? Jesus asked. He's just baiting him. About Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. We had hoped. So hope. And where? Right there. Redeem. Reclaim. Save. Salvage. Whatever. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. Our women, it's kind of funny, huh? The women get a high, high, high place in the resurrection stories. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. So the hope, there's still a malingering hope there, isn't there? Then some of our companions went to the tomb
and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. So you get the retelling of the whole resurrection story, and for these listeners like us, years and years later, just a little narrative. And I think the writer of the gospel wants to have that story retold, but puts it in an almost Shakespearean kind of way, where there are these double curtains that one, that we listen behind a couple curtains, and Jesus is kind of doing the curtain thing a little bit in a devious way. And these two Emmaus walkers really are clueless, but they talk like they know about the day. He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." Now, you had a little story from Cleopas or whichever one told the story, right? Tiny fragment of what's happened in these days. And now Jesus tells them the whole story of salvation. And what does he say? Beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. So the text is this one that we read. The text is also, to the two disciples, the text is what's been going on in these days from crucifixion to resurrection. And Jesus gives them a context, which is the whole creation story, from like Moses, burning bush, right? Let it go, right there. And the prophets, the whole shmear. And this is a very traditional rabbinic way to talk about all this while you're walking. But now you have a whole new context. You see how when we sit here and talk, we have both of these again in a whole new, you could write the word context again, couldn't you? And it's, are we hopeful? Do we have to try to be hopeful? Is it work? Yeah. Are we redeemed? Is it work? Or is it play? Is it, you know, it's a struggle, it's a journey right there. Is it growing? Is it creating? Of course. We're almost done here. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted, I love the word, acted. Jesus acted as if he were going farther. It's pretense. So he knew he was going to stick around, didn't he?
Sure.
He's totally messing with them. Vernacular. But they urged him strongly, just like he wanted them to, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." Comes right out of Vespers, pulls it right out of there, doesn't it? Hear that from the Vespers service? "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. Day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Right from, that's the part of the Eucharistic liturgy, isn't it? It's right there. Then their eyes were opened. They saw something they hadn't seen. You said you'd never look at a tree the same way. You never look at people the same way after you create a relationship, or you create an object, or you sew, or you draw on your skin or someone else's skin. All these creative things we've been doing here and the rest of your life, the hat, the things you made. Then their eyes, I read that, didn't I? No. Their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. Vanished. This is the resurrection Jesus now. He does this vanishing act. He does this vanishing thing, walking into through walls or disappearing. But he's body, but he's kind of not. We don't know how to label that even with all of our quantum physics. They asked each other, and it's a question. I love it that it's a question. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened to us the scriptures?" Were not our hearts burning within us? I just love that. That's the fire. It's the same fire that's in the bush, the burning bush, and it is not consumed, and it's in you. It keeps burning, but it needs to be
It needs the hope that comes with encountering the Christ or God as we walk through this journey, wherever you're going. So every text, every context has a subtext and a larger, there's this ripple, like you drop the pebble in the pond, and there's ripples of text and context. It's never static, I don't think. But the communion is when they recognized him, huh? When he sat at the table and they had bread and wine. It's a prefigurement of the Lord's Supper again. It's building on to what happened on the night in which he was betrayed. You know this passage, I'm sure, but I think it has something to do with this fire that we've been talking about that opened all summer. Take off your shoes. And that's what happens when you encounter this fire, this presence of God, and you turn. And the best response is awe and wonder, and it leads us to creation and redemption, or whatever redeeming means. Not static. I think redeeming is every day, ongoing, and sanctification, personal formation, growth, new life. Talk to me. Do you see that? Do you feel that at Holden? Do you experience that in life? Is that how your church life, your community life, works for you sometimes? It's never all the time, is it? Yeah.
I was thinking that, you know, when he came back, he in a sense recreated himself, and that's why nobody recognized him. I mean, I think that he had to show more of himself from the inward side than was apparent from the outward side.
I love that. Revealing by withholding, sort of.
Or you could say withholden.
Punster. Very good.
But like this object here, you know, it's recreation. You don't see the same things that are there. I mean, that were there initially.
Right, you don't. And we don't have all our other stuff either. And this one ends up being different every time you move it, huh?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because it hasn't been fixed, and that's fine. I felt really funny trying to set up this morning without the other things. It felt wrong to me that, my stuff is, it's all gone.
You better hope your son delivers it, that's all.
He could go to Mexico or something.
Brings up a really interesting thing you said in Mexico, because when we were rummaging around from the third level, I kept thinking, I've heard stories about families in Mexico that go through dumps looking for stuff that can be reused, and that's the level.
Yeah.
That's how they get by with life.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have the luxury of doing this just for fun, just for entertainment,
yeah.
For play.
That's right.
Yeah, there's this real kind of juxtaposition of what stuff like that means to different people.
That's a good comment. I know there's a movement in America of making houses, homes and houses, new houses from recycled materials and salvage. And there are architects that's all they use, builders that's all they use, and you can do that. Habitat for Humanity, actually a lot of it, more and more, is all obviously almost all donated materials, but they're finding ways to salvage other things and use that as their donated materials too. Yeah, we have so much in America that we could do that. And the food, the same idea. There is so much food that we misuse, I guess.
I've been down in Mexico where there are homes built from tires.
Mm-hmm. And then beer cans.
Well, Joe mentioned yesterday at the San Juans, the caretaker there, the first caretaker for Conservancy, mm-hmm. was the guy that owned the island. And he built his entire home out of driftwood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember he mentioned
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm. Showed the slide.
Yeah.
Raised the family there.
He may perceive that as being, what we would look at it being built out of driftwood. And I mean, he's perceiving that perhaps as the home of his dreams.
Yeah, but he could have done it out of logs. You know, there were multiple trees there.
Mm-hmm.
Could have built a log cabin, but instead he chose to do it out of driftwood.
Because of the... didn't want to cut the trees.
I don't know. Joe didn't expound on that.
Maybe just likes the driftwood.
I keep going back to that idea of perception mm-hmm. and how that plays into everything. So that when you're creating this object, but it is an object and it only gets its meaning through how a person perceives it. Is that what makes sense?
Absolutely. You have a lot of power and there's a lot of creating power for you to how to perceive, how am I going to perceive that person? Mm-hmm. And how am I going to perceive this moment or this act of terrorism or this student that's in my class or this whatever it is, we have all of us are doing that. And so many of our perceptions are controlled by the track we have going from way back, you know, whether that's racism or sexism or you know, the thousands of biases we all do have that we sometimes don't even see perception. So, and we do it all the time.
Well, the parables and then, you know, how the parables have changed for me because of the different perceptions as I go on in life.
Yeah.
Or even when we go down to just basic connections with the people we've come here with. We knew people in one way at home, and we've gotten to know them better, and the perceptions change, and some of the biases and notions from first impressions have been done away with, which is really a good thing, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How many times first impressions are erroneous?
Right.
You know, because of the initial perception.
Yeah. But here in this unique environment, we see things in different ways. See people in different ways.
I think Holden helps a lot of us when we come here. It's something about the place that helps us lower some of those boundaries or barriers that make it a little bit easier to perceive anew. If I'm hearing you right, that's how it is for me too.
There's a obvious openness here that contaminates you. I mean, it captures you. You know,
that's a better
it really
word.
Does.
Subversive.
Yeah, right. Well, the Lord here was subversive.
No,
devious.
It's true.
It's a matter of first impression. Alice and I took a tour some years ago, and the first evening we had the introduction of people. Mm-hmm. We left that and went back to our rooms, and I said, you know, I got trouble. So the week was over, we were eating with them, we were seeking them out, we spent more time with them than anybody else in the tour.
That's
just switched, but the first impression was entirely negative. Uh-huh. Everything else from the rest of the week was entirely positive.
Yeah.
There's a flip side to that, though, too. I mean, you could start with the perception of really enjoying someone and liking or whatever, person, object, whatever, and then as time goes on, your perception of that may change and you may not like it as well.
Right.
And is perception a linear thing? I mean, do you perceive more true as time goes on, or is it...
That's a good point. Yeah. Are you deceiving yourself?
Yeah, I think it's promiscuous. I really do. It's very, this Lauren Isley text I had up yesterday, he uses the word promiscuous, and he even calls it the pack rat memory. There's a pack rat that's in the landfill just rummaging around and grabbing whatever, and it gets webbed into a million neurons. He kind of talks that way about the way we craft our brain. Not linear at all. And I think the more we learn about brain research, I think it's absolutely true. That it's very multi.
Promiscuous, that's good.
Yeah. I'll never look at a pack rat and then again in the same way after hearing this.
There you go.
My scrambled brain there, this pile.
But that's okay. Maybe that's a little freeing if you want to perceive it that way. Can be scary too.
There's the same perception as reality. Mm-hmm. And prejudice is part of perception, and we get a prejudice, prejudgment.
That's right.
And sometimes it changes, and sometimes it's reinforced.
We live by that.
Yeah, yeah. But as far as we're concerned, it's our reality.
It is, definitely. And we're wired. I remember just staring out a window one time and talking to my brother, and to me it was a moment of insight, and I don't think it ever came across, but we hark back to it. I was just staring at these people. everyone has their own life, don't they? And it was really, to me, in that moment, it was way more than what I can tell you, but the perception, you know, this is so easy to just live your own life, which is all you get. But,
just reveal.
Cartoons, they show that as a light bulb.
Right, right.
Yeah, right.
It has to do with exposure. I remember my, I come from New York, so I think.
Oh, do you, Benny?
Thanks, Mel.
And I came from a mixed religion family. And my first Thanksgiving in Tucson, I was invited to somebody's home, and they were our students. That's going to sound prejudicial, but it is not. They happened to be from Minnesota. And so we were talking
That's prejudice.
About our backgrounds. And I said, you know, my father was Jewish, my mother was Roman Catholic, I was brought up a Christian Scientist, my sister is Roman Catholic, now I'm a Lutheran Jewish brother and sister, and then my children, each I have all the religions of my children and grandchildren. And this young man said, I heard about Jewish people, but I never met a Jewish person.
As opposed to all my friends are Jewish, right?
So, that's interesting.
Yeah. I do have one more poem. I have.
Before we go, for yes. I'm struck by reading this passage in this context that it is a story of sort of scavenging this by the disciples. Mm-hmm. That one little snippet where they urge him. He acts like he's going to go on, and they decide to keep him, you know? And actually, if you think about it, we don't know a thing about him.
Right.
And stranger. He's some weirdo on the street.
Still a stranger.
And they've talked the whole way, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they let this weird person stay. Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And it's also, that is sort of an echo from Hebrew scripture. I'm trying to think, is it Abraham? And Sarah, who let in these strangers.
Oh, yeah. And the one that promised a son or something like that.
Well,
yeah.
they realized they had angels unaware. And both, I don't think that was a mistake. I think this gospel writer meant to echo that. And that you never know. Mm-hmm. You never know when you're
where your Redeemer is. Where your redemption comes from.
That's right. Yeah. And I think that fits with your
that's
whole,
good.
Yeah.
I like that. That they claimed him or salvaged him.
They salvaged him.
Yeah.
That's
I do think that, and throughout the Old Testament, the emphasis on accepting the stranger too, and taking the stranger in, or
the hospitality.
Yeah.
I wonder where you got the perception that he was weird.
I'm just saying that.
You used the word weird, and I just wondered where you got that from.
I'm doing midrash.
I'm just
saying they don't know a thing about this guy.
Well, he also spoke to them and talked to them all around. Yeah. All along the walk, so they obviously knew that he was more learned than they were.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see where some of your perception has come from.
No, I'm just making it up. I'm just saying.
Well, people you meet on the street could be weird, even though they act very rational. But I think that's what I was
saying. Just because they're a stranger.
Right.
A stranger.
Also, he appeared out of nowhere. You know, he is now in Jerusalem. He seems to be
kind of out there.
I've often thought that about this passage. That, you know, how
where have you been?
Yeah.
You didn't hear about this? Everybody knows.
Right.
So
they'll ask you that tomorrow when you get on the boat. Where have you been?
That's true, too. Absolutely.
And then we'll have to say, we don't know anything about what's going on. When we get off the boat, we won't know anything about what's going on.
Say, hey, explain it to us.
Some of the titles, I felt like, and Bonnie, you said something about, I'm going to think about God now.
Yeah.
In your, and I think we, throughout the week, we haven't done a lot of that out loud thinking about God and talking. We did on the first day, and a little bit when we looked at the images and slides, but I'm trying to tie some things together with this in the last 5 minutes we have. But I don't think you have to necessarily name it always and label it always, and I don't feel this burdensome pressure to put a Christian frame around all this, because I think you got it and you're there. But I do think that, what was my other one here? Let it go. I lost my thought.
but I'm hoping this last poem will help too. And it's a little risky, so I give you this hoping that we can handle it.
What a starting point.
Wallace Stevens was one of the major poets in the second half of the century. Wallace Stevens, well, a couple of things. He's my favorite poet of all time. He's my number one guy. So.
Anybody that talks about ice cream is my favorite.
And that's a Holden thing,
black
too,
cherry,
right?
Huh?
Yeah, black cherry, right.
Did you not get one?
I want the rock pie, yes.
Oh, here. Let's read the bottom part first, because I think that'll give you a few clues to the, to how to... How, have you ever read Wallace Stevens, anybody?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, he's kind of philosophical, but he's also known as a very... a poet of wild imagination, kind of just a wild man that goes on these tears. He died in the year I was born, 1955, which of course I'm personalizing. Another thing I like about him is that he was an insurance executive. So for 40 years, he was doing Hartford Insurance, and he walked down the street in Providence from his home to the office, about a mile, and he'd write poems in his spare moments throughout the day and late into the night. But so many of our poets in America came out of the universities and the academies, and two of that era, Wallace Stevens and William Carlos Williams, both were non-academics that had a brilliant, brilliant mind. William Carlos Williams, a physician from Paterson, New Jersey, of all places. Anyway, the very bottom there gives us a few cues. Stevens enlarges on a joke in Hamlet. Your worm is your only emperor for a diet. So you know Hamlet probably. Romance and ritual gloss over certain facts that an honest obituary needs to face. As palpably physical objects, we've talked about physical objects all week, inviting attention to their own visible and audible and any other kinds of reality, all poems remind us of our own mortality, which has an upside as well as a down. The cold splendor of ice cream is a function of our limitations and, as Stephen says in Sunday Morning, death is the mother of beauty. So life and death kind of intertwined, which I think is third level. It's the third level, life and death, decay, new life. We talked about Whitman's poem, This Compost, and how new life is just teeming from this death pile of compost. The Emperor of Ice Cream. Call the roller of big cigars, the muscular one, and bid him whip in kitchen cups concupiscent curds. Let the wenches dawdle in such dress as they are used to wear, and let the boys bring flowers in last month's newspapers. Let be the finale of seam. The only emperor is the emperor of ice cream. Take from the dresser of deal, lacking the three glass knobs, that sheet on which she embroidered fantails once, and spread it so as to cover her face. If her horny feet protrude, they come to show how cold she is, as in silent. Let the lamp affix its beam. The only emperor is the emperor of ice cream. And I really think he's talking about perception. I really do. That, and it's his one stick. And throughout a lot of his poetry is nothing is real except things. That things are the real, and that the perception of the things is where the imagination runs, like this pack rat through the landfill and attaches it all, and we create the meanings. So perception, very creative. But where does it all lead? Like the epigraph says there, it's about death and dying, really. It's about death and dying. But while we live, as you said, today, you know, we can do the creating. Today, we can do the redeeming and the reclaiming and the saint. day we, how am I going to grow today? Am I going to think a new thought? Am I going to enjoy some ice cream and remember my death as well? Or what the middle line there, let be finale of seem. The verb to be, what it is, present, now. In AA, in the AA way, it's one day at a time, right? Yeah. And then the whole thing about seem, what is real and what is as it seems? Big questions. And then he has all these embellishments about this woman and this guy and the lamp and the light. How does the light show who you are? How does the light show, and where do we hide ourselves? Where do we let little glimmers out? And how does the light of Christ, you know, illuminate life, our path, ourselves, marriages, children? I'm not always sure people latch onto this, but that's okay.
I don't get it.
Okay,
the emperor,
that's all right.
I'm the emperor of ice cream. I mean, I'll think about it and ponder it.
The emperor of ice cream needs.
Anybody else want to take a shot at it?
Ice cream melts.
Okay. Delicious.
It's pleasure. It's smooth. It's the coldness. I think he's hooking the coldness back into death at the end of the poem.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this pleasure, but always
comes
death.
Comes to an end, yeah.
Always, but life and death can't be, they're just part of the same play. And he's having a lot of playfulness with his words here, kind of almost a fantasy world that he's, this fan tale, embroidered fan tales and covering her face. There's this hiddenness of some of these characters, and there's the be in the finale of what seems to be and what is, we don't really know. He's talking about that same perception. And what does Hamlet say? All the world's a stage, and we but players. When are we acting, and when are we for real? And do we know?
When it says to show how cold she is that, do you think that's pointing towards that she's dead? I mean, death?
I think so.
It's death.
Speechless.
Yeah.
The face covered, feet protruding.
He uses the word let a bunch of times. Let the wenches dawdle in such dress. Let the boys bring flowers in last month's newspapers. And you get some of these very tangible, the flowers, the newspapers, the ice cream, the cigar, the muscular one, the whipped in kitchen cups, concupiscent curds, objects, and then the subject.
Youth there, isn't there?
Uh-huh. I think
youth,
so.
And then you see the progression toward
youth
age,
toward
death, the fleetingness.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the subject, the things, and then the perception, and the life around these things, which would be the subjectivity of the subject, or the subjectivity of the object, I guess. And that whole complex mix, and how, where does it come from? It's all perception. It's all about what do we see in this world of things.
And you've got the light there at the end that gives you that vision, or that seeing of truth and reality, the end.
Mm-hmm. And when he says the only emperor, is the it's kind of a singular thing that he has that's his perception. And I think it's hyperbole. He's overstating that there, obviously, in some other poem, he's going to say there's some other emperor. But in this one, the only emperor, maybe, is life and death.
Ice cream is as fleeting as life itself.
Yeah.
And it's sweet.
Yeah, it's sweet.
Yes.
When I think of emperor, I also think of power. Mm-hmm. And it's almost
power
of ice cream.
Yeah. The power of life and death is really God's, I think.
Well, people line up for it every night.
Yeah.
Well, yes, we do.
It's the only thing they line up for, except
for food. That's good. That's very good. I want to thank you for being here and being with me through this. It's the first time I've taught from an art point of view. 2 years ago, I came here and I was teaching poetry, and threw in, they wanted me to bring in the junk side of things on the side. And this year they wanted, let's do the junk thing, and if you want to throw in some poetry, that's fine. They knew I would anyway. But thank you very much for being willing and eager participants, and I hope you had a redeeming and renewing and creative time up here.
Yes.
Thank you.